This is Cry Justice with Judy Redlich, examining issues of importance to you, your family, and our community that the other media just won't cover. Now, here's Judy Redlich.
Are you looking for ways to improve your jail ministry, to help the families of those who are incarcerated, and to change the correctional system in your state? Well, I'm Judy Redlich. Let's meet a pastor who's trying to do just that. He's a retired United Methodist minister, Dr. Paul Collins, and he started a ministry called Acts Ministries. Let's meet him. This is Cry Justice. Dr. Collins, welcome to Cry Justice.
Thank you very much, Judy. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be on your program.
Dr. Collins, maybe you could briefly outline what Acts Ministry does, and then we'll talk mainly about your jail ministry.
All right. Acts Ministry has a very simple mission statement, unity in Christ through the Holy Spirit. And we attempt to get denominational people, as well as people who have no denominational affiliation, to work together in various causes, beginning with worship, because if you can't worship together, you're not really united. And then we have five other areas, one of which is the area of social concerns. And it's kind of interesting to see people who are part of independent churches or maybe ordained by Acts Ministry, licensed by Acts Ministry, or ordained by some other independent group, along with mainline denominational people, working together in some issues that are social in nature. For instance, we have done a considerable amount of work in trying to correct some of the problems that we have seen with corrections.
Like, for instance?
Well, it seems to me, Judy, that the Department of Corrections in Missouri is a place that most people know very little about, unless they've had someone incarcerated or unless they've been incarcerated. The Department of Corrections is one department of government that most people really don't want to have anything to do with. I tell folks there are three things that people shy away from. One would be the Department of Social Services. The other would be the Internal Revenue Service. And the other is the Department of Corrections. Just not a very popular cause, because there's so many people who would rather adopt an attitude that, well, they wouldn't be in there if they hadn't done something wrong, and they're probably better treated on the inside than they are on the outside.
A lot of misconceptions, aren't
there? A lot of misconceptions, and one of the things that Acts Ministry has tried to do was to educate the public about the real situation about corrections in Missouri.
So what is the real situation of corrections in Missouri, Dr. Collins, as you see it, as you've been working there?
It was only after forming Acts Ministry that I really became actively engaged in trying to do something about the criminal justice system and the Department of Corrections in Missouri. And for that matter, we have a vision of trying to do something about corrections all across the United States, because we have more people in prison in this country than any country in the world.
So I think, Dr. Collins, that there are about 30,000 people who are incarcerated in Missouri, and that's a big voter block. If you look at them and you look at their family members, how many voters that would be. And by the way, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit. I've never discussed voters' rights for inmates on this show.
People who are convicted of a felony, and they do not have voters' rights until the time that, as they say, they are off paper. That is, they're either off of, they've served their time and they're off parole. Then their voting rights are restored. But, of course, there's some rights that they never get back. Like here in Springfield, Missouri, many people don't realize it, but apartment managers do not have to rent to anyone who has a felony on their record.
Really?
Right. Judy, my concern is this. Among many concerns, I have this concern. We have to ask ourselves, where did these 30,000 people come from? And, by the way, just about 4 or 5 years ago, that number was in the low 20s. We're adding a net gain of several people 7 days a week to our Missouri Department of Corrections. And we need to keep in mind that of those 30,000, the statistics say that 97% of them will return to society. So the chances are really good that someday a former inmate, now known as a former offender or ex-offender, will live next door to you. So we need to be working toward genuine rehabilitation, genuine education, whatever it's going to take for people to come out of prison and have a place in the community that is so meaningful that it's okay if they live next door and they do not contribute to the recidivism, which is the repeat, you know, going in and out of prison like it had revolving doors. Part of the problem as I see it is that in Missouri, we have basically made prisons an industry rather than genuine corrections. And besides, correction sounds like, you know, you're slapping a child across the hands with a ruler or something. We really need to think in terms of rehabilitation. There are lots of voters taken out of the voter pool because they're in prison or because they have been in prison. And as long as we have about 100,000, I would imagine, now, who are on probation or parole, and until they're off paper, they don't have voting rights. So we're talking about 130,000 voters in the state of Missouri alone. We had an idea about getting together as many ex-offenders and their families as possible, getting together as many families of the currently incarcerated as possible, and trying to educate them a little bit about their rights once they are able to vote again, and, of course, the family members, the importance of them voting, because, conservatively speaking, when you consider there's somewhere around 130,000 people either in prison or on paper, as it's called, if each one of them has five family members, well, if there was only 100,000 people in this situation, five times 100... That's a half a million people.
Right.
A half a million votes will change any election in the state of Missouri.
That's amazing.
And Missouri is a swing state, so it has national implications. What if this was done all across the country? So those people who want to be extra tough on those who, for one reason or another, have run afoul of the law, they need to be looking at rehab rather than punitive punishment, because our nation needs to have some good, solid people. The more of them that we can get, the better. Our nation's in great need, and we're not helping our own case with the treatment that some people are wanting to mete out to those who are incarcerated.
Al Hansen ran for state auditor, and he had been incarcerated 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he got a lot of flack because of his incarceration. That was 25 years ago, and since then, not only has he written a book to help people work with inmates, giving you some of the ins and outs, nice little book, but he's also not only reformed his own life, but done what he could to help other inmates get reformed. And I just think of the flack that he had, and he had to go through that whole barrier of being someone who had been incarcerated.
And that shouldn't be, because you know, right is right and wrong is wrong, is the way I was reared. And the man did whatever it took to fulfill
to clear his name. That's right.
His obligations to society, and has gone way beyond that. Chuck Colson is another example
right.
of a man
right.
who has greatly impacted not only this nation but the world, in spite of having been incarcerated.
So what is it going to take, Dr. Collins, to change the stigmatism? When I interviewed Lindsay Bannister about her husband, Alan Bannister, who was executed, and there was a big furore in the state of Missouri. In fact, it was a worldwide case. People from all across the world were getting involved in Alan Bannister's case. But I interviewed Lindsay along with a man from Germany. And they talked about how Germany works to rehabilitate their inmates. They don't use the death penalty in Germany. They don't use the death penalty in England. There's only three countries that use the death penalty, and we are one of those three countries.
I am a proponent, first of all, of prevention. We're not doing enough to prevent people from drifting into crime. I'm a proponent of intervention. When crimes have been committed, let's have some intervention.
Right.
As long as there hasn't been loss of life in this process. And when intervention doesn't seem to work, then let's see what we can do about alternative sentencing to cut down on the prison population. Let's see if we can get it so that prison is reserved for those who actually pose a very real danger to life, limb, and property. Those that don't pose a danger, let's work with them on the outside. But you see, a part of the problem is that there's some profit in prisons that most people aren't aware of. When you can have labor for about $8.50 a month, I think some of them, their wages top out at $30 a month, private enterprise can't compete with that. When you see a truck going down the road that says Missouri Vocational Enterprises, it's carrying products that were made by inmate labor. Private enterprise, as I said, can't compete with that. So we need to do all we can to keep people from having to go to prison. There are other alternatives. But then when they do go to prison, we need to be ready to properly receive them on the way out. I teach college classes part-time. I teach some classes in philosophy and some classes in ethics. And I tell my students that criminals, you don't find them under rocks. They don't come from outer space. They don't grow on trees. Our communities produce them. They come from our communities. So we have a community responsibility to stop producing criminals. When we do, and they are incarcerated, then they come out, then we have a community responsibility, which is to one another, to have a way of receiving these people, men and women, in such a way that they will not do something that would cause them to go back to prison, but they would come out as good and useful citizens. A great many people seem to have an attitude of lock them up and throw away the key or hang them high at high noon or whatever. And this obviously has not solved the problem. Building more prisons in Missouri has not solved the prison problem, has not solved the social problem. But it's going to take a lot of people well-educated in the facts in order to make any real changes in the criminal justice system and in the Department of Corrections.
Well, and you look at some of these groups that say they're against the death penalty, or they say they're against this, and they're justice issue groups, and they just sit around meeting, and they don't really accomplish anything because they don't have the guts to really go after the meat of the problem. And frankly, that's why I'm not a part of many of these groups.
Also, we find some people who, with the stand that they take, I tell them that it doesn't compute. For instance, some of the people that I have worked with from time to time are very, very liberal politically and liberal in certain social outlooks, so much so that they would favor abortion, even late-term abortion, but they would be opposed to the death penalty. I said, folks, something here doesn't compute.
No, right.
And then we'll have people who are in favor of the death penalty, but opposed to abortion. Well, you know, let's stop and think here a little bit. What are we doing? Do we have a genuine approach to either of these issues? I don't think so. I think people are running strictly on some kind of emotion, which I understand. But many of these issues have not really been thought through, and they will not be until we reach the point that we're no longer fearful of discussing the implications. This country got along quite well without the death penalty for a long time. The argument is still going on as to whether or not the death penalty deters death penalty crimes. Well, any really good sociologist or penologist knows that the death penalty does not deter crime.
That's true.
And if you make a mistake, you cannot correct it.
And it's said that 20% of those people who are on death row and who are executed are actually innocent. Now, I hope that that'll be less now that people have DNA testing. That should help in that. But still, if you have a poor lawyer and a poor trial, and you don't have anyone on your side to help you with the repeals, and you know that you're innocent, there's really nothing that you can do.
We all know that money buys the best legal help, just money buys the best medical care, no matter what people may think. So there's a lot of people in prison and probably people on death row who were just underrepresented. They didn't have the big dollars required for big defense. I spoke with Claire McCaskill. And I finally went to her office because nobody could produce for me an audit of the Department of Corrections, a financial
nobody
audit.
Could? Amazing.
And state representatives, they were sending me here and there, and state senators, and I'd been over there and testified twice before Senate committees on criminal justice and the Department of Corrections, and nobody knew, so I went to the auditor's office. Well, Ms. McCaskill came out of her office to see somebody in the outer office, and I walked up, introduced myself, and tried to get just a couple of minutes of her time to ask about an financial audit of the Department of Corrections. It took her less than 30 seconds to brush me off and head back into her office. Finally, I kept making enough noise around the Capitol. I think it probably had a little effect on it. She did produce an audit of the Department of Corrections, but it was not a financial audit. It was a performance audit, and it was for like the year 1998. And the biggest thing she found financially, the only thing, was that in the inmates' fund, which, you know, is because of the vending machines in the visitor's room, and that inmate fund is to, you know, buy some things for children in the visiting room, and that's what it's supposed to be used for. Since she found, I've forgotten how much, it was on her website or on the state website, her recommendation was, since it hadn't been used, that it go into the general fund of the Department of Corrections. Well, it was really a performance audit. And when I've asked other representatives and senators, they'll say, well, you know, actually, every department of the state of Missouri is audited when we hold budget hearings. I've always felt like an auditor's job was to audit the books of the state of Missouri, not the books of NXA or Republic or Clever. I really feel like she ought to be about, or he, be auditing the books of the state of Missouri, and the people ought to have a report on where the money is going. Now, I have looked at some publications having to do with the Missouri Department of Corrections. And quite frankly, when I look at the budget, it's like trying to read something written in a foreign language almost. It's not made clear. So it's kind of difficult to trace money in any department of the state of Missouri, probably almost any department of any government, any governmental level. But this is something that I feel should be an open book for the people of Missouri so that we know what the real cost is and not what the hearsay cost is that comes from the mouth of somebody who probably just has a political axe to grind.
Now, Dr. Collins, as you've been in ministry over the years, you've probably come in touch with a lot of pastors and ministries who have prison ministries. Or how would you challenge them so that some of these things that we've been talking about can be implemented?
All right. That's a question I'm really glad you asked, because I have said for years that being a pastor is one of the toughest things you can be. Being an evangelist is not nearly as difficult, because you get to blow in, blow off, and blow out. Well,
yeah, that's a pretty good term.
So we have a lot of prison ministry, so-called, where people love to go into the prison to preach, go in and hold a service. All they do is blow in, blow off, and blow out. And that has its place. There's no doubt about it. Prison chapels need a lot of help. Prison chaplains, if they're good ones, need a lot of help. The bad ones, we shouldn't help them at all. But what we need are pastors and lay people who want a prison ministry to take the next step and do some work outside of the prison chapel. As I said, I've testified before a Senate committee on criminal justice and corrections twice. In fact, I noticed in Springfield newspaper a few years ago that in 1998, MCI had returned to the state of Missouri something like $11 million as Missouri's share of the profits from the payphones in the Missouri prisons.
$11 million?
Yes.
from 29,000 inmates in the state of Missouri.
Yes, in fact, fewer inmates than that at the time. But and I don't know how many years, I would say just 1 year, that represented. But see, that's money that came out of the pockets of people who couldn't, most of them can't afford it. See, most of the people in prison are poor. And a great many of the people in prison don't have a high school education. And so we know that the environments they've come out of, that that money represented a tremendous amount of money to a lot of families. I could, in my mind, instantly I saw little children that had to make a choice between hearing their dad's voice at Christmas time or a toy. Young mothers who probably went without a good winter coat because the husband was incarcerated and their phone had been shut off because, you know, they want to talk and they can't pay the bill. I had with me 3 months' worth of telephone bills when I appeared before the Senate Committee on Criminal Justice and Corrections in to testify about this. And I had calls from inmates, and I was able to show that some of those calls, when you counted the hookup charge and so forth, came to about 71 cents a minute. And many of them were well over 50 cents a minute. I mean, it was just outrageous what it was costing. That those, when I finished, the senators were just astounded. And as I had mentioned earlier, no one testified in opposition. I was the only one that testified. Even the representative with MCI did not testify. As a result of my testimony, MCI, who had a lock and still
right,
has
they still have the corner on the
yeah,
long
they had a representative there. They didn't speak. Nobody spoke in opposition. Dora Shiriro was the director of the
right,
Department. She was
there.
And afterwards, she wanted to know if I would meet with her in her office sometime and do some consulting with her, and which I did. And it, when it became quite evident that I wasn't just going to be a PR person for the central office,
right,
then I was gradually phased out. I challenge pastors to do more than just blow in, blow off, and blow out. Second time that I testified, I had some ideas that some people thought were pretty radical, and the chairman was trying to shut me down, but I have to hand it to the lady from Kansas City, senator, in a wheelchair. She stopped the chairman and said, I'd like to hear more about what Dr. Collins has to say. I was saying some things that I think would really help to reform the whole situation. For one thing, why is it that anyone would want to build and own and operate a prison on behalf of the state of Missouri? Why would private enterprise want to be involved? It must be profitable. I've never known of businessmen wanting to build a prison, or build anything, unless they can make a dollar.
Right.
So there's some money involved, and I advocated, and still do, that inmates who are employed in the prison system be included in a profit-sharing plan. Not that that money would be kept on their computer account. They'd be given a reasonable amount to meet their needs for shaving material and deodorant and stuff that they have to pay for themselves. But the rest of it would come out to their families to help get their families off the welfare rolls. That's a radical idea, but I believe in it. I believe that when you take the husband out of the family, and the family, here's a mother with three little kids and she's struggling to make it, if he's in the prison working for the state of Missouri, let a large portion of the profit that he's making for the state of Missouri come out to his family so that they're not dependent upon the welfare rolls.
Right. Well, and when you look at the health care system, many of the inmates, especially those that are in the alternative sentencing program where they might only be there for a year or so, their health care needs are really deferred until after they get out. And they have
Correct.
To wait till after they get out. And so after they get out, where do they go? They have no other recourse, most of them, because they don't have the money. Their families are out of money to go on the welfare rolls. And then the welfare picks up their treatment, like whether it's for liver disease or whatever. And so here we are, back to square one. And it's
the way
all
we're running this system is very expensive
system.
For the taxpayer.
That's right.
And it doesn't have to be. What it's doing is it's feeding a bureaucracy that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
My guest has been Dr. Paul Collins. Dr. Collins is a retired United Methodist pastor, and he and his wife and a couple of other people have founded Acts Ministries. If you could leave some culminating statements to summarize what you want people to get out of this interview, what would they be?
I would want them to understand that there may be a better way of doing something that obviously we're failing at now. And included in that would be to let the inmates earn some money that's sent out to their families. Included in that would be to elect every 4 years a director of the Department of Corrections so that that person would be responsible to the voters every 4 years, and that the Board of Probation and Parole, which is a part of the Department of Corrections now, that they be elected every 2 years by congressional districts so that they are responsible to the folks at home, because otherwise we have no control over a bureaucracy that is touching nearly every family in the state of Missouri. And so we're going to have to think in some very different terms about reform rather than just more of a get-tough attitude. We need to think in genuine terms of reform, and those are some of the things that I would suggest.
Dr. Collins is from Acts Ministry in Springfield, right?
Right.
Springfield, Missouri. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could summarize again what Acts Ministry does and how people can contact you if they'd like to be a part.
All right. Acts Ministry works for unity in Christ through the Holy Spirit across denominational lines. We call ourselves trans-denominational and trans-doctrinal. We license and ordain ministers, and we carry on work in six very significant areas: worship, stewardship, education, social concerns, evangelism, and missions. Denominational people and independent non-denominational people working together. Anyone that's interested in this kind of ministry, they can reach me at area code 417-886-0223. That's 886-0223. The area code is 417. Or they can check out our website at www.axeministry.org. That's one word, lowercase, axeministry.org. They can send an email to ax@p.com/Collins, I as in information, S as in services.net. And I'll be glad to respond to them with more detail about Acts Ministry and what we're doing, not only in regard to the prison situation, but other social area concerns and other areas of ministry.
You know, what amazes me, Dr. Collins, as we were talking about some of these things, how one small voice can make a difference in the legislature.
That's right.
And maybe your small voice can also make a difference. Maybe you feel like you don't have the guts to stand up and say what's really on your mind, even though you might have had several years or a life of knowing about something and really wanting to get in there and change it. You never know how your still small voice can make a difference if you only open your mouth and talk to some of the people that we have mentioned. They're people too, just like us, and maybe they just need your word to start them thinking about something to investigate and make right. I'm Judy Redlich. This is Cry Justice. Dr. Collins, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And thank you all for being a part.
I'm Judy Redlich. Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Cry Justice. Hope you'll join me next time. Email your comments and show suggestions to judy@knlc.tv. That's judy@knlc.tv. I hope to hear from you soon.